The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
We're proud to have this damn good dog as part of the Fan family. Time to talk college football with Max Stinchcomb. Presented by Georgia's own credit union, Anderson Power Services, AAA, and ASW Distillery.
He joins us as always on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. He is Matt Stinchcomb. Matt, happy new year. How are you doing this Tuesday afternoon?
I'm doing fantastic, guys. Fully recovered from the game the other day. And hearing that distinction, by the way, for the Rams, I think when I was with the Raiders, when we went 3-13 after playing in the Super Bowl but not winning, that might have been the biggest free fall of a Super Bowl participant ever.
So that was a fun year with Bill Callahan, huh?
Yes, thoroughly enjoyable. I don't think Bill liked it much either. Nobody was happy.
Could you, in five words or less, describe that season for us? Take that whole season and give us the truly most encapsulated way to look at it.
I can do it in one word and say it twice. Do.
Yeah. So was crapola in the building, outside the building, game day, practice days?
Favorable. I mean, yeah. That's it. When you're in a franchise where it's just win, baby, and you're doing anything but that, it's a miserable. Everybody's in it to win, but that franchise especially, when you're winning, there's not a better place in the world. When you're losing, there are a few worse places to be.
And let's not forget, that's sort of the old days of Raiders fans sort of being Raiders fans and taking great pride in telling you stink, I'm assuming.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, the black hole, that thing was, it did not discriminate. I mean, it was, if they were for you, which they may or may not be, right? They transcend the team, the fans. The fans are the fans, and then the teams come and go, but the fans, you know, they live forever.
All right.
And that black hole will swallow up anybody, and if it needs to be you, then it absolutely will be.
We'll get to the good news in a second, but was there a moment, did anybody try to give that inspiring speech during that season? We're better than this. March on.
Yes, although I'm hard-pressed to remember, you know, who or when. You know, I'm sure, you know, Rich was a really good leader, Gannon, and I'm sure he gave it a shot. And there was multiple after-practice, you know, or at the conclusion of practice-type meetings, and it was a horrible year. I mean, we had, Bill Romanowski gets basically thrown out of practice and effectively off the team, although it wasn't. He wasn't thrown off the team, thrown out of practice for cheap shotting a tight end who was like, I think, a practice squad player. It was just Bush League stuff. I mean, the wheels just came flying off. We had tons of guys on IR. You know how it works. It's the whole IR thing on bad seasons and losing teams, it's kind of a chicken or egg conversation. One doesn't always precede the other. It's not always, oh, they're losing because of the injury. Sometimes injuries pop up after the losing is started. And it was one of those type of years.
Matt Stinchcomb with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. Would be remiss if we didn't ask you about what happened last night in Cincinnati with DeMar Hamlin, who was still in critical condition after suffering the cardiac arrest. Were you surprised that it took the NFL as long as it did to cancel the game or at least postpone the game?
No, and I don't even decry that because I can only imagine the number of the mechanisms in place, right? It's just not, I don't picture it being just a flip of the switch, a unilateral decision, number one. And two, I don't know that all of us, I don't know that we still have all the details. I think the right decision was arrived upon. And I do think it was given a prudent amount of time. And what was the ultimate time elapsed from a moment that he collapsed to the moment that the game was officially suspended?
Hour 10.
an hour. Okay. And in the meantime, you know, I don't know that are people getting real-time updates from the ambulance or from the hospital? I don't know what the information sounds like.
Matt, can I ask you a question, though? No doubt about it. Can I ask you a question? You certainly are. I have a feeling on it, but I think you have a basis for your feeling that goes a little bit different than mine because of your experiences. My thing was, and I took some heat for it because I knew the statement was going to have commissioner's name on it. The commissioner said, I thought Roger Goodell, instead of having, again, the world read another statement, why can't he get on and speak to it? He could read the statement. It could be in front of him on a prompter. I just think that MIA moment for him, and again, I agree with you, Park Avenue is a big building, but we have all said for years, it's him. It's him. Why is he not? Why is it just okay to let him go to bed with a statement out last night instead of being the face of this league and actually talking to whether it's the young man's family, the fan base, players, current players, former players? That was my problem. I knew that statement was going to have his name on it, yet he was nowhere to be found.
Yeah, I haven't seen or read the statement as it was sent out. Once it was, you know, I'm watching it. I was not watching Monday Night Football when it happened. My phone blew up. We were playing cards, and hey, you watching this? You see what just happened? And so immediately went and watched. And all the there are no words that was said many, many, many times, and there aren't any. There was at that point I said until a decision is arrived upon, which I felt inevitable, suspending of that game would be the ultimate conclusion, and I haven't scrutinized it further other than to try to remain updated on DeMar's health status. So, but I will say that the hour or whatever it is, I don't have complete knowledge of this. I didn't view it as callous. I didn't view it as. Even if they arrived at that decision 10 minutes after the fact, you know what, we should probably suspend this game. But let's gather more information, et cetera. It didn't seem like an undue amount of time. And so I don't decry the NFL. It's not a sensitive organization. I'll be the last one to apologize on behalf of the NFL, that's for sure, or the players' union, for that matter. I don't have a ton of esteem for either one of those institutions and for in a variety of areas. However, last night I didn't view that as a misstep, and I didn't view that necessarily the amount of time, the hour and 10, I guess it was, it took to finally say the game is suspended as an imprudent amount of time. I didn't take that as a callous.
Okay, can I give you one other level of this though? Because if Joe Buck made it sound like, according to the league, we're going to give these guys 5 minutes.
He said it more than once. The league denied it, but he had to have gotten that from someone with the league.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't there for that part. And I also don't know if that was misrepresented or not. 5 minutes. And I get it. This is the thing is that it is players' health. And there are guys that have had near misses because of what's happened on the field. And I've played with guys, seen it. I've played with guys that are taken off the field. Some of them on the, what they call backboards, where you're going, who knows, is this paralysis? We don't know. He's not moving. No thumbs up, nothing. And you're going, no, oh man, this is really scary. And those games continued. This one was, you know, I as I understand it, CPR administered, heart stopped, and guys are visibly stricken. However, from a at a whatever higher level, I suppose, we have seen really acute health issues, scenarios, medical conditions, injuries happen in football games, and those games continued, and that's happened quite a bit. Mm-hmm. When you think about these that have happened. So I don't know who knew what when, and 5 minutes does seem awful abbreviated, and I don't know what the pushback was or how that went from 5 minutes or if it ever was 5 minutes, and did the players say, it's not 5 minutes, friends. We're not going back out there for who knows what, until we know what's going on. I don't know. I don't know what happened there, and it's still new enough to me to where I'm not, you know, eager to judge really the response in general, other than to continue to, you know, pray that DeMar's health is stabilized enough after what was a really scary scenario.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the insight on that, and saying, you know, not seeing it live, it probably would have felt different. Ryan Clark was very good. Nick and I talked about Ryan Clark because of his situation, life situation, football situation, was really good. I thought if anybody really came out of this with a conscience, as much as anybody else, if not more, I thought it was Ryan Clark. So let's talk about Saturday and what Georgia now has an opportunity to do, to go undefeated and to do all the things that are just really, really hard to do in college football, especially if you might be starting your season with a fat belly. Like, you've just gotten out of winter and you've just had a big meal. They have not fat bellied this thing at all this year.
No, this one's been different, right? I mean, this team, you know, they have in some games created their own adversity, and so to kind of persist the whole, was it the hunger of being the hunter, so to speak. And take nothing away from Ohio State. I think what happened Saturday is exactly what needed to happen for it to be a close game, or for it to even break the Buckeyes' way. The Buckeyes needed to play really good football, especially offensively, and they did. I think C.J. Stroud played about as well as you could play. I don't know what else he could have done. In fact, he did things that we really haven't seen him do a lot of all season, you know, scrambling, the extending plays, the mobility. That final kick was set up because of C.J. Stroud and his escapability that really hasn't been a hallmark of his play. You know, he's far from a statue, but this isn't a guy he's no Caleb Williams. He's, you know, even, you know, lesser than like a Stetson Bennett from a mobility standpoint. And Georgia needed to stub its toe and did so numerous times. You think about the interception, you think about that first third and one, and then the ensuing missed field goal. You think about some of the coverages, you think about the missed tackles in the backfield. There was a number that the second effort that shouldn't have been afforded on a goal line run. There was a lot of plays in that game where you're going, you know, this season you've seen Georgia make those plays. Or not make those plays, as it were, with the interceptions, for example. But they did. And Ohio State was more than capable of capitalizing on not just those mistakes, but creating their own opportunities. That's not a team that you can afford to help out. They're plenty good enough to beat you, and that proved to be the case right up until the very end. So many circumstances that could have broken the other way that worked out in Georgia's favor, including, you know, the timeout that, it looks to me like there were 12 men on the field. I don't know. I'm not sure that flag comes out on the fake punt that was successful. I don't think the officials would have caught it. So that timeout was huge.
Can I ask a dumb question? Is that reviewable?
No.
So the 12 man, if you're screaming at an official, just do the head count, you have the ability to look at it. That's not a reviewable play.
Not that I'm aware of. It has. I think what they have changed. And I said, this is why you have those rules officials on there. Matt Austin was on that game. That never was discussed, to my knowledge. No, it was Bill LaMagne was the rules official there. I do think that they can review if a player's exiting the field, did he make it or not? Meaning, before the ball was snapped, was he still in the field of play, or was he out? Did he make it off the field? So, and you have to snap the ball for it to be an actual penalty. Incidentally, so you can have 12 men on the field, and if the ball's never snapped, the play never starts, then a penalty never occurred. And because of the timeout, that penalty technically never occurred, but it was so bang bang that, and in fact, many were crying, wait a minute, you know, Kirby called timeout, but the official did not signal stop of play until after the ball had been snapped, which to me did look to be like a legit observation. However, because it was so bang-bang, you're like, but then a flag should have come out because they had 12 on the field. And that would not only have negated the first down, but back you up 5 yards. So, but just there was all kinds of, you know, Marvin Harrison, which, you know, the targeting flag came out. That whole process, I thought, was exactly the way it's intended to go. They reviewed it. It was not targeting. It was a big hit. Knocking Marvin Harrison out of the game that was huge given the circumstances of how that game ended. The fact that he didn't return had a huge impact on that Ohio State offense. The Brock Bowers first down, that camera angle, because he's ruled short until they have this perfect camera angle to depict that, no, in fact, he extended the ball. He lifted his foot that was dragging almost out of bounds, picks it up, and puts his hand down in bounds. That was the most ridiculous body control awareness play I've ever seen, maybe ever.
To have
involved the boundary.
Yeah, to have the awareness to do that, because it's happening so fast, is beyond amazing to me.
And it's crazy that he had two more plays, that the timeout and the missed field goal will override that one. Right before he came on, I said, that's the one that's not going to be talked about enough.
Because so many crazy things happened.
Nuts. It was just, yeah, there was countless ones. Or there was another fourth and one conversion, I want to say, where maybe I'm wrong on it. It might have been third and short. And there's motion in the backfield. Georgia, they get a free play. Ohio State gets a free play. They end up stabbing a slant in there and converting. But the back in the backfield clearly false started. What would it be, falsely started? Maybe that would be better grammar. Doesn't matter. He moved.
We get the point.
They didn't see it. And Georgia gets flagged. You're like, how do you miss that? And when there's backfield motion towards the line of scrimmage, pre-snap, I don't know how you miss that.
I'm telling you this, after the fake punt, I'm leaving my offense on the field. I'm trying to get a first down there, because you can feel the momentum slipping away. And on the very next play, hindsight's always 20-20. I'm telling you, in the stands, I'm saying, if I'm Ohio State, I'm going for it there. Next thing you know, the defensive back falls down, wide open touchdown for Georgia.
It was nuts. That too, is how about Arian Smith? I mean, all that guy does is, I mean, he catches however many balls a year, like seven, but five of them are for touchdowns or something crazy. I got to take a look at that.
And AD.
I think that's an accurate stat.
And AD, you know, when you talk about, that's just it's a really good receiver making a good play, but you go, oh, that's why a guy like that can help me win an important game.
We talked about this earlier. Matt Stinchcomb with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. If they win another national title and Stetson Bennett comes through in the clutch like he did, is he the greatest Bulldog of all time?
Man. Boy, he's definitely in that conversation. I mean, that's a huge, huge statement. Among players, you'd be hard-pressed to think, you know, from a context of what he meant to a program, what was accomplished, then, you know, I don't know. You'd be hard-pressed to make an argument for someone else from a player perspective, who would have had a larger impact with greater results. I don't know who that would be.
And it's so good that the story just is a kicker. You know, the add-on of walk on, leave, come back. Like, I don't even need that part of it to say it. It makes it better. It makes the, you know, if I'm on debate team, I know what side I want. I've been saying it for a while. I want the side that says Stetson Bennett's the best ever to walk the halls and walk onto that field.
Yeah. And you know, I agreed. And you're right. That's just a sweetener now. That's no longer the focal point of the narrative. It's this dude just wins games.
I want to ask you, because you were probably in the building. I don't know how much of the TCU game you had a chance to see, because you're in the building. And by the way, Nick also said, how annoyed were you that there were no replays of all the things that were happening where you needed to know what was going on in the building? I had the luxury of my couch. You guys didn't.
I mean, any controversial play, no replay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very discouraging, we'll just say. Disappointing.
It was a day of 1,000 memes when you look at both of these football games. Michigan's best offensive line in the country. You let a coach screw it up around the goal line. You had a kid drop a football. Maybe you got screwed on a call. I thought it was a touchdown. But it was really an incredible day. I don't know how big a baseball fan you are, but the 1986 playoffs are regarded as the greatest playoffs in Major League Baseball history, because it was just insane what was happening. You know, if we get a great game, this is going to be the greatest end. If we get a great game, a Texas-USC type game, this is going to be the greatest.
Or just what we saw this past weekend, two games.
This is going to be the greatest postseason in the history of college football.
I think we've already had it. I don't know that this has to be a great game. I'm not just saying that because I don't know that I could endure another close one. But we had two fantastic playoff games. Two excellent playoff games. These semifinals, there's nothing that approaches either one of these. People are saying, you know, this one with Georgia and Ohio State, that eclipses the Rose Bowl in 17. And I'm like, okay, you know, maybe it does, maybe it's close. But the that same year, you know, what was it, Alabama, Michigan State? That was a donkey. So you only got one that year, and then the championship game. So maybe you could say that was the greatest in 17. But this one right here, I think part of it because it involved such an upset, TCU Michigan, and there was a lot of folks, I can't remember, what was the spread on that thing? What were they laying?
What was Michigan laying in that game? I want to say it was it 6.5?
Yeah, or 7.
Okay. Depending upon where you looked.
But now it's 13.5. Can I read you a headline? Tell me, just respond to this headline. Somebody actually wrote this. I'll tell you if you want to know who wrote it. No need to play college football playoff title game. Georgia and Ohio State just did.
Careful. Be very careful.
Crab poison. Alert, alert, alert. Yeah, who wrote it?
Terrence Moore. No need to play college football playoff title game. Georgia and Ohio State just did. I read that, and again, thank God I didn't have coffee or anything in me because it would have ended up right in front of me. I would spit it out. Like, wow, are we really doing this that quickly?
Yeah, well, we get the angle right. I mean, this is not the first rodeo there, so that makes a lot more sense. But, you know, I get it. I do get it. I mean, TCU, a lot of folks, and, you know, the money said otherwise, but I wasn't anticipating that. I wasn't anticipating a win, and I didn't think it'd be a blowout, right? But, you know, how games can leak late or, you know, you get a score or a couple of field goals on what were otherwise stalled drives, but that all adds up. Next thing you know, it's a two-possession win. That's what I anticipated. And, of course, we got quite the opposite of that, and it ends up being this barn burner. And I want to say the over-under early on was like 55 points, you know, so they missed that by half. So it's just I can see why the perception would be that. Of course, a lot of people are anticipating a more comfortable victory for Georgia over Ohio State, especially based on what we saw in that Michigan-Ohio State game.
We've talked about it. You're a Rocky fan, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So the scene when you hear, we don't need that kind of man in our life. That man just keeps coming. Did you hear the Sonny Dykes cut postgame?
No.
All right. Here's Sonny Dykes postgame. And I swear to God, when I heard this, I thought of, we don't need this man in our life.
Be sure, post-game stuff, you guys compliment Michigan. Say all that stuff about him. I told you guys, I'll handle the shit talking, right? Yeah. Yeah.
They got nothing to lose coming into this game. They had nothing to lose going into the Michigan game. Nobody expected them to be here. And that's a dangerous team that's in that position.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, and that's kind of been their M.O. That's the angle here. The angle going into the Ohio State game is you're going, look, this team can throw haymakers and land them. This isn't like a guy that's just kind of flail around in the middle of the ring and hope it works out. No, you know, they're not going to be able to like punch for points the whole game, but they are going to be able to throw some big shots. And if they land them, they can Buster Douglas you better than that even. And that was, to me, that was the story going into that game. Now they definitely proved to be more effective in moving the football offensively, although inevitably it was out of system plays where C.J. Stroud scrambling around and just playing unconscious, just phenomenal football. But this TCU team, just kind of, they hang around. They find one out in the Michigan game, of course, they jump on them and seed things. You know, their end of half sequence was not very good. I'm sure if Sonny Dykes were to be scrutinized during the coaches' clinic, he's like, well, yeah, I would do things differently there. Because you basically gave up a 3-point swing there just based on the way you were playing football and not managing the clock. However, otherwise, this is the team that always claws their way back into victories, and they just don't know when they're supposed to lose. And this wasn't supposed to be the team this year.
Yeah, they'll decision you. You know, it might go to the judges' cards. That's you know, unless you knock them out and somebody declares this thing is over.
I just believe that this game is going to be a lot better than what the spread is indicating right now. Just my thought.
I think there's no reason to think otherwise with this TCU team. Every time you think that they are going to be not boat raced, but pushed around the way that it would look like they should be on paper, they don't. And even after watching them play, it just doesn't seem to work out that way. Now, you know, they were, I think they jumped on Kansas State pretty good, end up dropping that football game. So it's almost like they get down early and it's a comfort zone for them. Wasn't the case in the game the other night either versus Michigan. But all season long, what was a knock was, TCU doesn't control the game. Well, TCU always has to come from behind. Yeah, but but they come from behind.
I think the one thing we learned is you can never judge a team as well on their worst game. Everybody judged Ohio State on the Michigan game, similar to last year when everybody started to judge Georgia based on the SEC championship game loss to Alabama. A lot of times that's the wake-up call that you need.
Yes, that's a heck of a point. I mean, maybe, right, you're looking at that game and you're going, you know what, Ohio State, in that scenario, Ohio State is Georgia in the SEC championship game when they played Michigan. They came in there riding high, feeling pretty good about themselves. They get thumped and just and physically so in the second half especially. That stood out too. I mean, there's a lot of things. I've never seen a game in the horseshoe. That's a bucket list thing. I've always heard about it, but their fans, I don't know how many they had. I'm guessing it was maybe, if I'm being generous, 70-30, maybe. It didn't feel 70-30 as far as like just walking around, but there's more than certainly there's felt like there were LSU fans in the SEC championship game, and those Ohio State fans made their presence felt. They were in that game. They were fired up. They were loud. And I thought, God, I cannot imagine.
And they're also, those same people who are loud are also telling you Ryan Day is not the answer, because there was a big rallying cry around that. Hey, we asked you, we'll finish up with this. Not too long ago, we asked if you'd ever seen a fight. You know, you're out with a couple of teammates, and whether it's a bar or someplace social, TCU seems to be the one where you go, oh, let me pick out the guy whose ass I can kick. And then you get in the middle of it and you go, oh, I made the wrong choice. I made the wrong choice on this one.
In high school. Oh, yeah. I mean, then you realize, I didn't see his other ear. That thing's cauliflower. This isn't his first rodeo.
It's like, yeah, Max Duggan. He's all blotchy. You think he's going to collapse, and he just keeps coming at you.
Yeah. No, I mean, literally, they are like, they'll let you punch yourself to the mat. Keep swinging. Yeah. I mean, they kind of are that team, you know, where you just think nobody ever pays attention. It's the quiet one in the corner you got to watch. It's not the mouth in the middle.
Or one more analogy that at least a couple of people in this room can relate to. When you know that people are looking at you, when your wife is next to you, you go, how did he get her? There's something going on here that I don't understand.
How did they get here? How did this happen?
Well, I've never been able to relate to an analogy more in my life than that one.
Join the club. This was like a podcast interview. You were on a long time. You really earned your keep today, Matt Stansfield.
Ask for double pay.
It didn't feel like a long time, guys.
Time flies when you're having fun. Matt Stinchcomb, always a pleasure. I'm sure we'll do it again next week, getting everybody ready for the national championship game. Maybe the day after we talk about another national championship for the Dogs when all is said and done. We shall see.
That would be a lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
You got it. Always a pleasure. Matt Stinchcomb with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker.
That's why we say, once again, Matt Stinchcomb in 2022, not only was friend to the show, great guest of the show. He just started. Everybody else is now going to have to try to catch Matt Stinchcomb in 2023.
He hit the ground running.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.